The world around us is changing rapidly, and your job as a fundraiser or nonprofit marketer is evolving with it. We're Pursuant. We're built by fundraisers for fundraisers, and we've been in your shoes. So we want to bring you tips and tools that you can use to meet you where you are in your current reality and help you go beyond to where you really want to go. You're tuned in to a Pursuant listening experience.
Hi there, folks. Taylor Shanklin here with the second episode in my series where I sat down with Doug Cogswell to talk about different metrics and performance drivers and how you can use them at your organization or higher ed institution. In this second episode, Doug and I talked specifically about the concept of relationship mapping and how to use different pieces of data that you have to map relationships amongst your different constituents. Doug has a lot of experience in doing this, and I hope you find some value in this episode. Enjoy it. Hello, hello, Go Beyond listeners. This is Taylor, and I am back with another part in my series, my sit down with Doug Cogswell, where we are talking about different types of metrics and how to measure things and what to measure. Last time we talked about major giving metrics, and today Doug and I are going to sit down and talk about relationship mapping. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Good. Looking forward to this one. This is an exciting one.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited about this too, because I think it's a really hot topic that we're not always talking about as much as we should be in our jobs as fundraisers. So Doug Cogswell is the Executive Vice President of Strategy here at Pursuant. He has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to analytics and nerding out on all of this stuff. So let's get it started today, Doug, with our topic on relationship mapping and how it helps you with your relationship fundraising. What exactly is relationship mapping in the context of fundraising?
Good question. And so the goal is you're trying to figure out from the data in computer systems as best you can, who knows who, who's most likely to know who. And so, for example, maybe you're trying to reach one of your top prospects for major giving, and the field officer really doesn't know the person. With relationship mapping, you can figure out that that prospect, you know, was, say, it's a higher ed institution in this case, you know, in a fraternity with a group of other people. He went to maybe Stanford Business School and got an MBA. Then he went here and there. So the database has all these attributes. Is trying to figure out of the wealth of people who might know this prospect the best. And then obviously you, maybe some of those other people are on, you know, one of your committees or whatever, and the field officer can then use one of those people to reach the prospect you're trying to reach. That's the basic idea.
So what kind of relationships do you look at to span across relationship mapping? And just to back up for a second, this is where analytics and fundraising comes together alongside technology and having the tools in place to find those relationships that you maybe didn't know about. So what are the different types of relationships that you like to look at, Doug?
Yeah, I would put them into four basic groups. I mean, there's family, and generally family relationships have, they're more intense, they're closer, they probably have, to use the word, more acquisition power, but there's not that many of them. You've got business relationships where there may be a lot of them. And there's a bunch of organizations that go try to turf them up, board relationships, all of that stuff. But generally, there's less connection there, so they have less acquisition power. There's a lot of work in social media, like, you know, if you're in the same Facebook group or whatever. There could be a lot of those as well, but they generally have low acquisition power. The ones that tend to work the best are friends, because there could be a number of them. Most people have, you know, 25 to 60 friends, some more, some less. But they have a fair amount of acquisition power, so maybe not quite as strong as family members, but there's a lot more friends and family. So what we recommend is using the data to find friends and also look at business relationships, social media, and family. But we kind of see friends as the power alley here because of the combination of, there's a number of them and they've got pretty good acquisition power.
So would you say there's like different degrees of influence when you're looking at those different buckets of relationship? Like, how do you look at that? Is there a scale that you like to use, starting with the friends maybe?
There is, because, you know, people are likely to respond to people based on the strength of the relationship. And those relationships come from doing things together, you know, participating in things together, working for the same cause, playing a sport together, you know, if it's school, being in a fraternity together. That's where the connection happens. So the more of those things there are, or people are actually doing things together and engaging, the stronger. I mean, business relationships, you get all, I hear, read all this stuff about they're on the same board, but some of these boards are, you know, 15, 20 people. The fact that you sit on a board periodically with a group of other people doesn't mean you have a relationship or the kind of connection you would have is if you're friends and you're going on, you know, a ski trip together, or, you know, you're working on some cause you know, you're actually on the reunion committee working with some other people. That's a more intense connection thing. So that's what we're trying to get into. Like, what are these interactions and you know, which ones are going to count more, which ones are going to count less, all of that stuff.
What if people haven't been collecting this data? So let's take a step back around that. If, you know, an organization is listening to this and thinking, okay, that's cool, but like, I don't have any of that. What do you recommend to get started?
Yeah, start collecting it. How about that for an answer?
Start asking for it.
Yeah, but, you know, in these things, higher education, universities and colleges are generally going to have a lot more because it's people are like there for 4 years or 2 years or whatever. They're doing things. There's more. They come back together to reunions. So there's a lot more of relationship events that are collectible in education. Come to healthcare in a minute and nonprofits. And healthcare, the high end, there's some really cool work going on there as well. But higher ed is much going to have a lot more data than healthcare or nonprofits. And you're going to have the class year, obviously. And typically, like, so I was a class of 77, and I'm dating myself here. But, you know, I'm going to have relations with people in my class potentially. And then we typically go, you know, back three and forward three with declining weights. So for me, a 77 is going to have a higher weight than a 78 than a 79 and so forth. And student activities are tracked. So if there's a 77, I was in the Zeta Psi fraternity. Somebody else is in that fraternity, same class. You know, I played hockey, people on the hockey team. My major, physics and engineering. So you got this student stuff that starts a base. And then you've got, you know, what reunions have they come to? Are they in, you know, season ticket holders of the same sport? Did they go to the same grad school and in the same year? So you start building on these things. Most universities and colleges have a lot of the data that you need to get this started. In healthcare, we've got some pioneering work going on with some of our clients where they're trying to collect this. It doesn't come in as naturally, but take the Chicago area. Country clubs, you know, are they in the same country club? You can research that and gather it. You know, did they go to the same grad school together? You know, what's some of the degrees? But that's a lot of research to build the data because a healthcare institution doesn't have the same set of things that have brought people together, you know, into these connecting activities, if that makes any sense. Hopefully I'm making some sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And I want to dig into that a little bit more, the difference, because you mentioned it, you know, higher ed versus like healthcare and other nonprofits. What are some of the different ways in which you've seen those different types of institutions be successful through relationship mapping? Like, what tips do you have based on what kind of institution they are?
So most of our work so far has been in higher ed for the obvious reason they're more likely to have data that can be used for this. We've got some initial work going in healthcare where it's proving to be productive, but it's a lot more effort to get it. But if you go to higher ed, one question could be, you would use this for how you might, what might happen is I'm looking for class agents for the upcoming class of 90 reunion. Well, you've got a bunch of people you're looking at. How about picking them based on who is connected to the biggest potential dollar value? And you can figure out dollar value because, you know, people have capacities and engagement scores. There's a whole other set of things we've done on this, but you can create a projected dollar value for everybody in the class. And then you look at the relationship of the class agent candidates, and you'd ideally want to, you know, select them based on their characteristics, but then also put a weight on the connected to the biggest dollar potential because you're trying to bring the biggest dollar potential into this reunion because that's a, you know, an engagement creating mechanism for your donors. And another question would be, you know, what prospects should I assign to these class agents? Well, You can use the relationship mapping to figure out, you know, that John is connected with these 10 people really well. Their top prospects are in the class and so forth and so on. So those are the kinds of things that this has been used for. We had actually an interesting one with one of our clients. They've talked about it publicly, TCU down in Texas. They had one of their board members has a box at the football stadium. And the question was, you know, who would be the best prospects to have come to the game? And you quickly use this relationship mapping stuff, which happened to run in our software, which is, we think, is cool. But the prospect research team, like in about 15 minutes, got a list of like 10 people who would be really good fits and quickly nailed the list down and made the invites. So that's sort of a set of, you know, areas where this can be really, really helpful. Or another one, we're organizing an event in Florida, and maybe it's, you know, the Miami area. And, you know, who can I lever to fill it up? I mean, who knows the people in the Miami area the best? They might not live there now. Maybe it's that, you know, you've got 7 prospects from some classes in the 80s. You want to, like, get the person who's most likely to be able to, you know, hey, I'll come down. I'm going to this event with, the president of the college or whatever, and I'd like you to come. And it's going to be about, you know, the investment in the engineering school. And I know we were all engineering majors together. And hey, remember those days, you know, banging the beer pong table down in the fraternity? You know, let's come and let's just relive some of the past and come to this event. So it's kind of a set of, you know, areas where you can use this stuff.
Hey there, if you're enjoying this episode, feel free to head over to Pursuant.com/podcast resources to grab our latest free fundraising resources. We update the page weekly, so be sure to check back regularly to get free fundraising ebooks, webinars, and other resources designed with fundraisers like you in mind.
I love those very practical examples of, you know, you're going to an event in this area, like let's look at who will be around and who might be interested in it. Are there any other just like potential factors that can weigh into helping you find the right people there? As an example, in Florida, like what other things are you looking at to map a relationship to then a specific, you know, event or campaign or something like that?
So there's, yeah, you've got a couple of, as you just asked that question, there's interest areas, which is separate from relationship maps. So if you're actually doing this dinner in Miami and it's about the engineering school expansion, you'd presumably want to not only look at who's connected to the people there to try to get them to the event, but you want to presumably pick people who have an interest in engineering. I'll hit that in a second. But the connecting things tend to be, you know, the class year, student activities, sports in particular, fraternities, can carry a lot of weight, same major, went to the same grad school together. Presumably if they were, you know, pick something, they were English majors and went to law school and they were in this same class year in English and they went to the same law school and graduated the same year. They probably connected over that period of time. Have they participated on committees? Which ones? You know, if they're on the same committees after graduation, reunions, which alumni events have they come to? If they live in Chicago and they've been to the same events, same class year, same grad school, they probably saw each other there and reconnected. Freshman dorm is another one. A lot of colleges and universities, the freshman dorm creates a real connection experience. It depends on what the institution is, but that data is usually not collected. It can be retrieved, though. We've had one case where they got some students and paid them to pull the stuff out of the yearbooks and put in the database. Now you've got it. So there's a set of things like that that are the connecting experiences. You asked implied another question, which is the if you're doing this event in Miami, you've now figured out who knows the people you like to get there, but you want people who are interested in the engineering school because the proxy here was this is a, you know, a meeting with talking about the big expansion in engineering. You can hypothesize that people who graduated engineering and have a graduate degree in engineering probably are aligned towards that. You can also, though, we've got clients that are, you know, using their newsletter to try to figure this out. So you can sequence articles in an online newsletter and see what people click on. So in addition to, you know, maybe they didn't take an engineering major, but maybe they're now, they got an MBA and they're running technology companies and they're like really excited about some of the breakthroughs going on in the engineering side because that's what their company's about. You wouldn't see that from degrees, but you'll see it because they click on, you know, every time you put an article out on the cool things the engineering school is doing, they're clicking on it. They're telling you, we really like what this institution is doing in engineering. That is tracked in the database and ought to be saved. It's easy to parse it out. So now you can, here's the people who live in Miami. Here's the people that have clicked on our engineering articles a lot of times recently. We know they like this content. Now let's figure out from the relationship maps who's most connecting to bring them in. So there's, Taylor, you raised the second question, but these things all kind of weave together if the goal is to get the right group in of top prospects for this engineering school discussion in Miami. A couple things come together. And that stuff can be in the database. I say can be because not everybody is systematically collecting it. I would argue they should. Once it's in the database, it's pretty easy for data analytics tools like ours to parse it apart and make it easy to then get your dinner set up.
Yeah, well, I like your example of the newsletter, and it makes me think about the fact that the data that you might have on an alum, for example, could be a bit stale when you're thinking about who they are today. And you did mention at the very beginning of our conversation, Doug, social data. So that's, I think, another interesting data point is like looking at what you have and then also going to other things like your example of, you know, they signed up for this newsletter and there seems to be an interest in that. Or you go research this person on Twitter and on Facebook and like find out what they're into and then map that back to what you're doing.
Yeah, and there's ways to systematically use technology to also pull interest areas out of the social media, you know, tools out there.
Exactly. With different social listening tools and things like that out there, then you can put those into like what we do with our tools and mash a bunch of different data points up together. So I think that can get pretty interesting when you're looking at this topic of relationship mapping. All right, Doug, my last question for you today is, do you have like a great example of an organization that just had an aha moment or like some really cool results when it comes to relationship mapping and putting this into practice?
Yeah, I shared the one about the, you know, trying to just put people in the right people in the box at the football stadium. I think the one I mentioned about the class agents, we've done this work at a number of schools. I think this was Dartmouth where this came up, where they started realizing as you start thinking through who should be your class agents, it gives you another dimension. You want the people who are well-connected, but well-connected with the, presumably if you're trying to, one of the goals here is to raise the most money through the reunion that's coming up, you want the people that are connected with the biggest groups of high potential donors. So, yeah, I think that was an aha. I mean, we were looking at this at the beginning more how to find a specific person. You know, I'm trying to connect with John. Who's the best to connect with John? But then we started realizing you could also use this for other purposes, like, you know, finding the class agents. And, they did that and it really helped. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of different dimensions to how this could be used.
Awesome. Well, hey, Doug, this has been a good topic. I like talking about this stuff with you, and you really are a wealth of knowledge around this. So if people want to learn more, I think we've got some stuff up on our website. You can also reach out to us at info@pursuant.com. Just put in the subject line that you want to talk about relationship mapping and talk to us about what Doug talked about here today if you want to learn more. Doug, any last tips on ways to get more information on this or get in touch with you?
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, and I would just encourage all of you. This is totally doable. And, you know, even if you're not collecting all the data, start with what you've got. There are data geeks like us here at, you know, Pursuant who are good at hauling this together and making it work for you. And then over time, as you, like the freshman dorms we mentioned, probably don't have it in the database. It's not critical, but it certainly helps. And you can always add stuff like that in later. So there's always, I think, a fear of not getting started because it's not enough data. There almost always is enough data. And it just gets better as you start getting value out of it. It creates more of an incentive for people to actually get the data in, and then it really refines and gets more and more accurate as time progresses. So I would just encourage everybody to give it a try. So far, we've seen great value from this in the areas we talked about.
Yeah, I love that. Give it a try. You've probably got a little bit more at your fingertips than you think you have. So just shifting your mindset around that is the first step. All right. Well, thank you, Doug. This has been a good conversation and I've really enjoyed it. And I learned a lot about relationship mapping. So thanks for joining today and sharing your insights. We'll see you next time, folks.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning in with us.
Be sure to check out all of the latest and greatest Pursuant resources at Pursuant.com or drop us a line at info@Pursuant.com.